Outside is Free, der Podcast über kleine und große Abenteuer.
Herzlich willkommen zu Outside is Free, die erste reguläre Folge wieder nach der Sommerpause. Beim letzten Mal waren wir noch im Teamwagen auf der Deutschlandtour unterwegs. Heute haben wir einen norwegischen Gast und Norwegen, Gerald, das ist auch eins deiner Lieblingsurlaubsländer, oder?
Auf jeden Fall. Also ich weiß das Land wirklich zu schätzen. Bin quasi gerade aus einem Skandinavienurlaub zurückgekehrt. War eine Woche wandern in Norwegen und anschließend noch in Schweden. Also faszinierende Landschaften, faszinierende Natur kann ich jedem wirklich nur empfehlen.
Faszinierende Küche auch. Unser Gast heute ist nämlich Henrik Orre, ein norwegischer Koch, passionierter Radfahrer, der auch viele Jahre für Radprofis gekocht hat, unter anderem für das Team Sky. Er hat mehrere Bücher über das Kochen geschrieben. Eins trägt witzigerweise auch den Namen Outside is Free. Und er hat auch ein Buch über das Kochen unterwegs geschrieben. Das Kochen draußen, auf Reisen mit dem Rad. Und da werden wir uns heute mit ihm auch drüber unterhalten. Bekannt ist Henrik unter dem Namen Velochef. Und im Sommer 2021 hat Henrik in Oslo auch ein eigenes Restaurant eröffnet, das Velochef Clubhouse. Ja, eine Mischung aus Restaurant, Bistro, Café, speziell für Radfahrer, Radfahrerinnen. All das werden wir heute mit ihm besprechen. So, a very warm welcome to Henrik.
Hi.
Our shortcuts. Which pro rider is the best cook himself or is passionate in cooking?
I would say Ian Boswell. He was always asking for tricks and was interested in learning more. And I see now that he cooks quite often himself and it looks very good. He was in the Sky period when I was there. Now he's turned more over to be like a gravel pro for himself.
Okay. Are there any like bad habits when it's, or in eating habits for the pro riders, or have you discovered anything like that? Because I remember in my time there were a bunch of guys putting like curry ketchup on nice risotto dishes, or there was not so great.
Yeah, we remember when I started at Sky, the majority of the riders had this balsamic glaze. I would say on everything. It was always on the table and they put this balsamic syrup on everything we basically handle out. Fortunately it calmed down through the years as hopefully the cooking got better.
Have you had any failures when you were working for Team Sky, or epic failures as a team chef in general?
I don't think I've done like a huge failure. I would say we had we had technical problems with our kitchen trucks. We had difficulties getting into hotel kitchens and stuff like that. And then worst case that if we weren't allowed to come into hotel kitchens, we couldn't do our job properly. And that happened. So that's of course is a failure, I would say.
Which was the best moment as a team chef for you?
I would say the season 2015 and 2016, when I was a whole part of the whole Tour de France group, and we won back-to-back tour victories with Chris Froome those years, and also in between we had the team had huge success and we did very well, and it was just like a machinery that worked, and it was a great period to be a part of.
You're a passionate rider yourself, so what was your hardest moment on the bike?
That must have been a few years ago when it was like a Rafa Prestige here in Oslo. So we were riding like in groups 4 and 4, and it was a set route on a bit more than 160 kilometers with over 3,000 meters of elevation. And according to the weather forecast, it was not supposed to rain. So I did not prepare myself for a wet ride. And I thought neoprene gloves was not needed that day. So I took some like easy cotton ones instead. And when we got into the rain, and basically the hardest section of the parkour was the last 50, 60 kilometers. And we got rain and the temperature dropped down to like five, 6 degrees. And it was just miserable. I could hardly, when I got off the bike and got back, I couldn't unzip my helmet. I couldn't shift properly. I just had to use my hands and just hit the brake levers and just hope that we could shift. And it was, when the wet and cold gets you, it's just like the worst feeling ever to ride your bike in.
Yeah, I guess you can just call yourself a bike rider when you discover days like this on the bike.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Der Podcast wird unterstützt von Bergzeit und Outdoor Active. Bergzeit ist ein Online-Shop, der euch hochwertige Bekleidung und Ausrüstung für alle möglichen Outdoor-Aktivitäten liefert. Sei es Sportklettern, Outdoor-Trekking, Freeriden oder Skitouren. Darunter ist aber auch Bekleidung und Zubehör für Fahrradfahrer. Bergzeit hat neben dem Online-Shop auch zwei Filialen in Holzkirchen und Gmund. Außerdem bietet Bergzeit erlebnisgeführte Touren und Kurse für zahlreiche Bergsportarten. Außerdem wird euch der Podcast präsentiert von Outdoor Active. Outdoor Active ist die weltweit führende Plattform für Outdoor-Aktivitäten wie Wandern, Radfahren, Mountainbiken und Skifahren. Henrik, let's talk about how you became a team chef. I read that you have been breathing cycling since you were a kid because your family loves cycling as well. How was that?
Well, it was not only that we loved cycling, because both my father and my older brother are both Norwegian champions in road cycling. So it more or less came as as people like football in other families, cycling was the thing in our family. My father also rode the Olympics in Munich in 1972, and became fourth in the team time trial, just missing, I think they missed like 30 seconds on the bronze medal. So it was like a big thing in our family, and I grew up in cycling, the community in Norway in the 80s and beginning of 90s. So I was it more or less came to me, and then I remember like playing with Tor Hushovd, who later became a big champion when he was just like 10 years and I was like 6 or something, and we were just playing around on local camping spots, which we stayed at each weekend because that was all we could afford. So it was a very low key budget, but it was a great time.
Okay. And in those days, what kind of role did cycling play in Norway compared to today?
At that sport, I would say it was an extremely, extremely small sport compared to how big it got. It was a very small, quite a few clubs, really, but not a lot of. The sport didn't get any big much attention. It didn't get any much press or media or like that. But we didn't have big amount of pros. I mean, probably at that time we only had one or two pros that was out in the world racing. So it was a fairly small sport at that time.
Okay, and which were your heroes then? Your cycling heroes, rider heroes, when you were a kid?
I remember like Miguel Indurain. Probably, yeah. He also came to Norway, and I remember in Oslo in '93 when we. So that was one of the big. I saw him quite close up in '93 when the road race was in Oslo.
One of those pedaleur de charme. Great cyclist. And in those days, how did you develop your passion for cooking?
Well, that came when I had to change the direction you wanted to do in school. And I had started to pick up a little bit of cooking at home, not much, but I found it a little bit interesting. And then when you had to choose like where you wanted to do for your future, I choose to go to chef school. and educate myself as a professional chef. So I choose that line, and basically I've stayed true to that for well over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm. And in which kitchens worldwide did you learn this profession?
Mostly I studied in Oslo. I also had a couple of trips to France, and then majority of my grown-up professional life has been in Stockholm, Sweden, where I had quite a few years, and I was head chef at a really high-end Michelin restaurant there for a few years, and that's probably what's have formed me most as a chef is the Stockholm years, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Cooking for pros. Mm-hmm. Like, when did you start your career as a team chef then?
That started first in 2011 after that was the year after Tor Hushovd has won his world title, and that just gave a massive boost to the whole sport in Norway, which also gave the Cycling Federation in Norway a lot of more sponsorships and more money coming in, which then hopefully, for the first time, made it possible for them to bring a chef for the World Championships. So I knew the world, the team director of the Norwegian Federation at the time was an old friend of my family, a guy called Stefan Kjærgaard. And he phoned me up basically out of the blue and asked if I knew about someone who was interested in coming to the Worlds with Norway. And at that point, I had just left my job. So I didn't have any plans. So I said, yeah, I think I can do it myself. So without basically any experience of cooking for bike riders, I took that job, and I did that for a couple of years and cooked for the Norwegian Cycling Federation. So I did a couple of worlds and pre-camp for the Olympics in London and stuff like that before I later joined Team Sky.
Nice. Have you worked for any other teams?
No.
So it was the Norwegian national team and then the US Team Sky.
Yeah.
What is the appealing thing about joining the cycling family and cooking for professional cyclists?
Well, I wasn't really sure what I went into. I didn't know too much about it, and that's also why I at the point reach out to Team Sky, because they started to get quite a good success in 2012 when they won the Tour de France with Wiggins and started to be like a really team to look after. So the interest fell for them to see if I can. My first thought was if I can go and see what they do and maybe bring some experience back to the Norwegian Federation. That was basically what I was after. But so I went to their Mallorca training camp in December in 2013, I think it was, and then stayed there for a week and worked together with the team chef they had at that point. And when I was about to leave, they asked if I was keen on doing a few days for them the year after. They had a bigger program and needed more help. So if I was keen and had the possibility, if I can help them with a few days. And so the first year started with 50, and then it became 90, and then it became consistently 160, 70 days there for the last few of them. So yeah, that's how it started basically.
What is the biggest challenge in cooking for professional cyclists, or the main difference compared to everyday customers?
I would say the riders in cycling are extremely thankful. So, compared to customers that come and pay for your food, you have the cyclists are extremely, extremely thankful to come and sit down for a great meal. I would say the biggest challenge working for a pro team is that you every day has to base your basically food and menu in the surroundings that you're in, meaning that you're not know for 100% what you're going to get. So for each town, each hotel, each day, basically, there is a new challenge in finding the produce you need, find the food you need at the right quality. Whereas at a restaurant, you can just phone your suppliers and it will be delivered to your door. But here you have to basically go out and hunt it yourself every day. And that is very challenging, especially when you're staying on top of mountains, you're staying in conduct places somewhere down in Europe. It just needs a lot of time to plan, basically.
Yeah. What are the main goals when you prepare a meal for professional cyclists? Like, is it more the taste you're after, or is it more for performance and recovery, or like, how do you create your meals?
Yeah, so I would say it's a good mix of all that thing you mentioned. It's super important for me. It's important, first of all, that it tastes good. What we serve to them need to taste as much as it can, and that's a good properly food. But it was also important that we had the nutrition value in the food that the guys needed. So I worked very closely in preparing menus with our head nutritionists, who gave me good guidelines to help us feed the guys the right food at the right time, as you can say. So that was a big challenge and something we worked really hard with to always and then also in the recovery phase, which I think we developed a lot through the years from when I started to when we finished, how we did and how the quality at the end we had in our recovery phase, from basically starting up with a simple baguette to ending up a few years later with a proper meal and a proper plan and a structure for how the recovery phase of food would be straight after the race.
I think the diet of professionals has changed a lot within the last 10, 20, 30 years. Perhaps we can discuss how it has developed within this era. If you look back at the 60s, for example, Eddie Merckx, when they got up, they ate a couple of steaks before eating breakfast and heading over to the start line. Is meat, from your point of view, is meat still crucial today?
I think red meat is less crucial today than it is probably. You would never see any guys today have a couple of good steaks before they go and do a do a climbing stage in the tour. From our point of view, we served more lighter sorts of proteins. We always had fish available, and we tend to use more chicken. But also, I mean, people like it's sort of like an award or something to be a good treat is to have. At some point, we would always have red meat because people like a good steak. But it had to be. We placed it after a stage where we knew there was a easier stage the day after, but it could be a flat stage. So we would never do like red meat the day before a mountain stage or something like that.
Okay. So then in the end of the 60s, it was a Swedish scientist who invented the concept of carb loading. So the pendulum began to swing from high meat to high carb diets. Carb loading is still relevant today, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I would say yeah, absolutely. We worked a lot with carb loading at Team Sky, and we were at every meal we would serve a lot of different carbs so people could choose their favorite, basically. So every dinner we did the dinner always in like a buffet style. Mm-hmm. So it will always have rice, pasta, potatoes, different sorts of other carbs. So carbs is still a big, diesel fuel for the guys. Yeah.
Okay. It won't change, I think. So then in the 80s, there was another shift a little bit away from real food towards packaged bars and drinks, I think. It was about carbohydrates, protein, fat, and so on. Was this shift the most important step in hindsight from your point of view?
I don't know too much about the history, to be honest, but I think, of course, and probably Gerald will know this probably even better than me, of course, but I think the develop has that we see today is probably much better than it was in the 80s and 90s for sure.
Yeah, there were gels as well at the end of the 80s. They were new as well, 87 and 85 caffeine, Gerald.
My favorite legal performance booster. So I'm working as a part-time barista, which I started after I retired in 2017. Nice little coffee roastery in Cologne here.
Ah, cool.
So I'm quite into coffee. How important is it for cyclists in general? I mean, I knew a lot of riders are really, really focused on good coffee, and yeah. But what did you discover in your time as a team chef?
No, I agree. I think I think they found it super important. They drink probably to also get the caffeine boost out of it, but they love good coffee. They drink good coffee, and they drink a lot of it. Absolutely. Yeah. So and now you see all guys have the equipment at home at the Rocket Espresso machines, and that's I think people care a lot about it, and it's an important part of the community, definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely a cyclist thing.
Yeah.
In the 90s, I think it was the first teams started to bring their own chefs to the races. What is the goal behind that you bring your own food, your own chef?
I first and formally saw it as a security thing for the riders. By bringing your own chefs, you are in 100% in control of what the guys are being served. We know the date when the produce has been bought. We know where it's been bought. We can always secure the produce from the grocery store until the table. That we know that what they are being served is the absolutely best, and also to like avoid stuff like food poisoning and guys being sick and ill by the food, but also. As it turns out, we care more and do better as much as we can for our selected team. But first of all, I would say that it's the security for the guys.
Nutritional periodization was like kind of a new thing, which I didn't really discover in my time, but means that you serve different kind of foods through different periods in the season. Maybe you can explain a little bit what's behind this.
Yeah, so the way we worked was that at certain parts of the season we would serve quite low carb food. This was especially in training camp in December and January, where this is a quite when the riders came back from a little vacation, usually they had gained a couple of kilos or something like that, which is 99% is in their heads. But then they were having a different part of training, because then they had like long days, but in big volume but low intensity, so that often was very low carb food at that point, which they could go out on a start a long day out on the bike and have a low carb breakfast, and don't have any carbs before after midday, basically. So they would drink like just water for the first 2-3 hours before they did any sorts of carbs. But then when they came back, it was full carb. So it was like very different then. And then when we got to races, it was always full carb, always. And then also the same for when we did altitude camps on Tenerife, like in front of the tour, for example, it was also very, very much low carb breakfast up there. So the boys would have a very protein rich and I would say non-carb before they went out and did 5-6 hours on sometimes quite low intensity, but just be out there. So yeah.
Would you say that this kind of diet is also useful for everyday riders, or is it just a thing for real professional cyclists?
That's hard to say. I mean, I think like depending on how much you ride, and if you're not going to race, I think you'll be super fine with just eating a normal diet. I think a lot of amateurs or people who takes this way too seriously, I think it isn't that hard. I think if you just eat a good breakfast before you go out and bring a bottle with one with water and one with something in it, I think you're going to come a long way. And you don't need to bring a gel and a bar for a 2-hour spin. I mean, if you had a breakfast before, you'll be fine.
True.
So if you look back at the Team Sky, it's often said that they were looking for marginal gains, lots of marginal gains, which add up to a major gain. From your perspective, the nutrition topic, was it a marginal or a major gain in those days for Sky?
I think we put a lot of energy and resources into it. So. Mm-hmm. And I could see the development we did over the years. We got better at it, definitely. And we did everything we could possible to get the best from our point of view to what we served and the environment by stepping up to a kitchen and restaurant truck. So of course there was a lot of things done, and I truly believe that we did develop a lot in 5 years, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
You worked there until 2017, I think?
17, yeah.
And are there new trends since then, which are very important for those teams?
I don't know. I haven't been following that close because I've been quite busy with doing other projects after that. But I can imagine that development happens all the time, so it would surprise me if nothing has happened in those years. So I still believe that they try and do new things all the time, for sure.
Okay.
But the baselines are the same. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think almost every team has invested in their nutrition concept in the last year.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Which was totally necessary, I must say, because I remember in my time we had a chef for the Tour de France and some other grand tours, but on most races you were just eating the hotel food, which wasn't that good all the time. So no. You could end up in sitting in some campagnolo hotels in North France and eating cold overcooked pasta and. So I think it was definitely necessary that they invested in the nutrition.
Yeah. Which is why you stopped working as a pro. So let's discuss about cooking on the go. And Gerald has prepared some questions for that.
Yeah, as you said before, you retired from professional cycling to start your own projects. And one of these projects is, or one topic is cooking on the go. I watched the trailer that you did to promote your your book Outside is Free, can see you guys on gravel bikes. Would you say gravel is the better cycling for you?
Personally, it definitely is. Because where I live here in Oslo, it's we're so close to so much gravel tracks. And in terms of traffic and all that, living in the capital, I probably find myself now cycling 80% of the time I ride bikes now is on gravel, because we have 550 k's available with gravel tracks, less than 20 minutes from my door. So to go in there, not having to fight with the cars, you can be alone, amazing scenery, lakes, all that. It's just a scene that's developed, especially up here in Norway and Scandinavia for the last few years, it just exploded.
Is that how the idea came up to you or came to your mind when just you did some bike packing, or how did the idea develop to write that cookbook about
that book? Yeah, that is done. I think we released it in 2018, and then the gravel scene started happening around that time. So I had done two books before, which was focused on road cycling. Mm-hmm. So it just felt natural to shift over to do gravel at that time, because it was the new thing coming, and I found myself enjoying that very much myself. And I also been cooking a lot of outdoor stuff before, so I find that very interesting. Different way to cook, and you have to use open fire and small camping stoves and things like that, which it makes it everything different, but you also have to think a little bit. So it just felt natural after doing those two first projects that we went on and did a adventure and gravel book.
Yeah, you say it's completely different, but yeah, what influence has your experience working for professional teams? And yeah, I mean, that's often performance and nutrition science driven cooking. What influence has this on your outdoor cooking, or is it completely different?
I wouldn't say too much, actually, because you have to think and plan so differently, because when you're basically out bike packing, you don't have too much space to play around with. You have your panniers on your bags, on your bike, and that's about it. So I don't think I haven't brought too many ideas and too much from the pro cycling into that project, more about seeing the possibilities in the bike packing community, which I thought could be. I wanted to do the opposite of opening a bag of something and pour hot water on it, and then you leave it for 1 minute and that's your dinner. I wanted to prove that it's actually possible to bring fresh food out and make a decent meal out of it instead of just pouring water into a bag. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the highlight of the day when you sit down and have a nice dinner after riding the whole day. So it should be, be some highlight then. Well, would you describe the joy of outside cooking or outside eating?
Oh, I think that is so, that's one of the best experience with being the outside. I think because you don't need to do that much before it feels like you did something special, because you've been out the whole day and you sit down by a lake or something and you pack out your food and you cook a little bit of something in your pan, something really simple. And it's the surroundings and the people you're there with and what you've done through the day that makes everything, and the surroundings that makes the whole trip beautiful. And then you just add a good meal on top of that, which just tops off the whole thing, I think.
When you say it's like basic things, I have the feeling that you can discover that kind of approach with many world-class chefs.
That they want to go back to basic, cook on open fire, and use local seasonal ingredients. Was that also the idea for you when you published the Cooking on the Go or the Outside is Free cookbook?
Well, of course, I wanted to try and stay as local I could with the produce and where we did that book. And also cooking on an open fire is that's one of the most natives and things to cook on, because it's been I don't know how many thousand years we have been cooking on open fires. So and now we see, as you say, we see that restaurant trends going back to restaurants again, when people want to create that sort of thing inside. But I guess that's become more a natural thing now, I think, for more chefs, as you say, all over the world, that we use things that grow around us and use the surroundings. And it just feels much more natural now to, for example, we take something like strawberries. Strawberries are in season in Norway for a short few weeks in June to July. So that's when we should eat and use strawberries here in Norway. We shouldn't eat strawberries in January from Holland or Spain or something like that. So it just feels a natural way to think and cook on.
How did you invent your receipts for the Outside is Free cookbook? Is it more about, it must be something that you can carry along the whole day, or is it just the receipt comes to your mind and then you think about, is it possible to cook this outdoors?
Yeah, both way actually. Book is basically divided into main chapter. One is what you can carry and cook when you are riding, so I would say like on bike stuff, and one is base camp. I sometimes use base camp, which allows us to have like more equipment, a bit heavier stuff and more food. And then if you only solo riding and you're going from a place to place, which allows us to bring of course less and lighter equipment and less food and everything. So the book has two main chapters, and there's those recipes are quite different in terms of easiness and what you have available, I would say.
What is your secret, if you want to tell, your secret ingredient when you're, for cooking on the go or for cooking outdoors? Something that you always can carry with you? Or...
I don't know if I have a secret ingredient, but I one thing I like to tell to people is to try to prepare stuff at home. Just like do main chopping, do main cutting and stuff before you leave out, because it will just make the whole experience easier for you.
Yeah, I'm a passionate hiker, so I usually go on long hiking trips, and also like the idea about cooking outdoors. And so my secret ingredient was always dried mushrooms. So they're really light and gives a lot of taste, and that's something I found out. Which trips would you recommend the cooking on the go instead of stopping for food on the route? Like, are there like landscapes where you say, okay, no, Norway, there are no possibilities to get you there, no restaurants, no food, so you have to cook on the go?
Well, that just depends on where you are in the world. I mean, you can, at least here in Norway, I guess that's the same down when you go to Middle Europe. I mean, you can choose to take routes that will not see people for a few days. Then you're basically forced to cook on the go and bring everything with you. So that depends on how you want to do it. And also from an economic point of view, I mean, it's always cheaper to cook by yourself and a little bit and go and visit a restaurant. But I would say that comes all down to where you choose to do your adventures.
Yeah. The cooking on the go or the outside cooking also has an influence on your job as a chef or on your receipts the meals you serve in your restaurant?
We haven't really done that sort of things at the restaurant yet, but we are planning to do now when we get into the autumn to take our guests into the nature and then cook for them in the nature instead of doing it at the restaurant. We're planning on having like an event where we start with a bike ride and then we end up at a spot outside in somewhere in this big forest in Oslo where we will stop and have a lunch together and cook in the wild instead of doing it at restaurants.
Yeah. We spoke already about coffee and cycling. Does the coffee topic also play a role in your Outsiders Free cookbook? Or what is suggestion for preparing the best coffee outdoors?
Usually outdoors, I like to often, I either do two ways. I either do like traditional, place the kettle straight in the fire and have very, very like grounded coffee, like the old cooked coffee straight in the kettle. Or I bring a little V60, which is a pour over to have with me. But I tend to like to do the traditional, put the water kettle straight in the fire and cook the water and put the ground coffee straight in and let it leave it for a couple of minutes, and then you pour the coffee up later. You might get some sediments with you or whatever, but it's a part of the outdoors, I think, and I find that very tasty, both tasty and a bit like how it should be.
Back to basic again.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Any tips for people wants to start their journey and start outdoor cooking or cooking on the go?
Yeah, once again, I would say preparations. Look into how you can prepare yourself to bring the food without take it with you. I mean, everything from changing the packages, chop up things at home. You can compress and just so you can bring it out with less packaging, less plastic, less everything in the nature. So you actually bring more produce with you. And also you have to take in how many days are you going to be out? Are you spending 3-4 days? Well, then you have to check into how, I mean, then it's probably not a good idea to bring fresh fish and stuff like that. So you just, I mean, planning and preparations will give you a greater experience when you finally get out, I think.
Yeah,
of course. So we already talked about your restaurant, your COVID-19 project for 2021.
Yeah.
So you opened your restaurant in the summer of 2021, I think. How would you describe the concept of this clubhouse?
Yeah, so Velochef Clubhouse is a cafe restaurant based on the cycling culture and lifestyle. We create a lot of events. We create a lot of the surroundings in the restaurant has a cycling vibe to it. We show cycling, of course, on the every highlighted race on television. But then food wise, we especially our lunch and breakfast serving are mainly dishes at the moment that are taken straight out from the books. So we try to create a new meeting place for the cycling community in Oslo, basically.
So the clubhouse is content marketing for your books, and your books are content marketing for the clubhouse, vice versa.
Exactly.
Great. And I think it's one of your books, it says like a kind of advertising that you should learn how to cook with that Velo Chef twist. What is the Velo Chef twist?
Does it say that?
Yeah, I think so.
The Velo Chef twist. I just natural type of cooking, to be honest. I like to just use natural ingredients and add flavors to it, and just keep clean produce in focus and do basically the best out of it. But respect and treat every single produce we use at the restaurant and in the books as good as we can.
Okay, so the first clubhouse was introduced in Oslo. The second one will be in Germany, I think, in Cologne, right?
I would be happy.
Bring in some if there's a possibility.
Yeah. Bring in some. I mean, I love the.
You could supply the coffee, you know.
Yeah, I would. I love the Scandinavian like cooking and flavors, and I'm a big fan of the Scandinavian cuisine. So I would be happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, we do not. Do not write out that we're going to expand sometime in the future. So everything is possible.
But yeah, I've read that you have already done some events in Germany at the Rafa clubhouses, I think. So
that is right. I've been to Berlin a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I also done stuff for a Swedish band called Primus, who creates this outdoor equipment. I've actually been to Cologne. I've been to the Globetrotter in Cologne.
Great.
So I did a cooking session there in that warehouse. And I did a few other one as well. So yeah, I've experienced a few cooking things in Germany.
So you're already familiar with Cologne. That's good idea to start with a new project, but just kidding. What are your new projects, your new ideas for this year and the next year?
Now we are just mainly working on the restaurant and doing the clubhouse as best as we can. I mean, we're still a little bit, there's still COVID restrictions in Oslo. So, I mean, we're not 100% free to do whatever we want. And we still only existed since the beginning of June, so we're still a very fresh startup restaurant. So I see at least this year and probably start of the next year also will be all focused on getting the restaurant up to its maximum level and just be constantly filling that house with new events, new things happening. So that is the future at the moment.
Okay, we wish you the best. Good luck for your project in Oslo.
Thank you
very much for the interview.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.